We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You don't want it. You don't need it. But you're going to get it anyway. The Kevin Sheehan Show. Here's Kevin.
The play is under review for a major penalty assessed in New York.
And that is the right call. That is the right situation at the right time to make sure they get this right. To me, it's extension of the elbow into the head of TJ, and Panarin should be a five-minute major in game misconduct here.
After reviewing the play, we got no penalty on 10 Rangers. Number 24 for Washington's got a minor for a roughing.
Oh, wow. There's the,
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I think everybody was a bit surprised last night after that hit on TJ Oshie that somehow the Rangers found themselves on the power play. The show today presented, as always, by Window Nation. Call them at 866-90-NATION or go to windownation.com. Mention my name for a free, no obligation quote. Joining me here right at the jump is Smokin' Al Kokin, part of the broadcast last night, part of Monumental Sports Group's Caps coverage, playoff games, icing on the cake based on where they were at one point in the season. But let me just say, because Al knows we will be doing some draft talk on the show today, and I'll even ask Al who he wants Washington to pick a quarterback. But coming up here in this opening segment, Ralph Vacchiano, who's done a ton of really good reporting for Fox Sports, he's going to jump on with me. Then it's Jay Gruden, followed by Scott McBrien. We'll get Scott's thoughts, former Terp quarterback, on the draft. So a busy show, but just explain to me, they go to break, they go to commercial break. I'm expecting the Caps are going to be, you know, on this five-minute power play with a chance to totally get back into the game, and who knows where it would have gone from that point on. How does Panarin nearly take Oshie's head off and the Rangers end up on the power play?
Kevin, we're still trying to figure that out. I agree 100% with what you just said, 100% with what the esteemed Mr. Craig Lachlan said as you led us into the show. We have heard this time and time again when the National Hockey League hands out suspensions for hits to the head. Primary source of contact, primary place of contact being the head. Everything I have seen, and a day later looking for more that maybe I had not seen by super slow motion or still frame or whatever, I still can't figure out how Artemi Panarin didn't get the five-minute major that you mentioned, because there was no question whether it was the shoulder or the elbow. It doesn't make any difference. As long as the primary source of contact is the head, that to me has always been the definition of what a major should be or a possible suspension should be. And the fact that, as you said, the Capitals ended up with, you know, Connor McMichael kind of doing the ordinary thing, which is just a little retaliation, like, hey, you can't do that to the guy. I didn't really even see a roughing call that qualified there. So it was one of the great mysteries of the night, something I know the Capitals were really, really upset about, and maybe one of these things now that the Capitals can use moving forward, because I do think the way they handle that, they obviously killed off the McMichael penalty and were the better team from that point on. Maybe this is something that's going to be a rallying cry for this team that's used a lot of different rallying cries and a number of different negatives said about them as rallying cries to even get them to this point.
I mean, there's no way if it's flipped and that's Tom Wilson making the hit on a Rangers player that he's not sitting for five and potentially suspended, right?
There's no question about it. No question about it. And again, I understand part of the conversation had been, well, it was initiated by the shoulder, and the shoulder started to the chest and then rode up to the face. I, again, in looking at all the replays I've seen, I did not see the initial point being the chest or right underneath the neck. I saw it as the head. So I couldn't agree with you more in terms of if it's Tom Wilson, we are talking about can he even, you know, how many games before he plays at the beginning of next year, because he's just served a six-game suspension with a undisciplined but not really a, shall we say, an aggressive, I was trying to swing my stick at the guy.
Right.
The stick came up, and he, you know, he gets the six games. If this is him, and it is again against a guy like Panarin, their superstar, we're talking about how many games into next season does Tom Wilson have to sit out.
All right, so they're down two games to none. They were a prohibitive underdog heading into this series, and they were unable to take one from the Rangers in New York. The series reverts back to D.C. Friday night for Game 3, but I'm just curious as to how you feel after last night, which was a tussle. I mean, it was there. You know, even at the end when they emptied the net, they had opportunities. Do you feel more encouraged about their ability to win some games in this series after last night or not?
After the first two games of this series, I walk away, Kevin, thinking, I didn't see anything that says to me the New York Rangers are the far superior team. They, to their credit, and again, I hate when it's always just, you know, one side of things, because the New York Rangers have won the first two games of this series. And to the credit of the New York Rangers, they have taken advantage of capital mistakes. That being said, without those capital mistakes, I have not seen a Ranger team that you would say, based on what you talked about, the paper matchup, the 16th seed against the number one seed, I have not seen the mismatch. And I got to give Spencer Carberry a lot of credit for this. One of the things he said to all of us in the media after game one was, here are the things we need to start doing better. We've got to come out. We've got to start the game much more aggressively. Well, what did you see last night? They dominated the first 5 minutes of the game, and they got the first goal. The power play was horrendous in game one. That's to the detriment of the Washington Capitals. Some credit to the New York Rangers. Their swarming penalty kill is excellent, but the Capitals needed to make adjustments. He said, we've got to start entering the zone with more speed. We've got to make better decisions when we get to that blue line, whether it's a pass to make the entry, whether it's a chip in and go get it after we make the entry, whatever it is. Well, what happened? The Capitals scored two power play goals last night by doing exactly what he said, better speed on the entry. So he has talked to us about some of the generalities. I guarantee you he's broken everything down much more specifically to the team, and the team responded and played a much better game. But they can't make the mistakes they've been making. On the penalty kill last night, they had on the first Ranger goal, they had three guys basically on two players all the way on the other side of the ice, leaving one defenseman basically in no man's land, and these guys are too good with the sharp passing. Alexander Ovechkin, who has not had the good start to this season, or to the series, I should say, no question about it, and then compounds it by a terrible puck-handling mistake on the power play that leads to the shorthanded goal. Again, credit to the Rangers for cashing in on that mistake, but a mistake that A, can't be made, and B, shouldn't be made by Alexander Ovechkin. So if you take away some of the mistakes the Capitals have made, to me, this is a dead-even series. Maybe, even if you go back to last night, they could be coming home 1-1 based on when they were at their best, they were as good, if not better, in stretches than the Rangers. So to me, win game three, and suddenly I think we do have a completely different series.
Yeah, 5-on-5, the Caps actually statistically were much better than the Rangers last night. But in these first two games, the whistle's been a quick one. Too quick, don't you think?
Oh, I agree, but you could also say in that first game, the Capitals, with four power play chances, had a great opportunity to make it a much closer game, and they didn't do it because their power play was terrible. Last night, they made the adjustments. The officiating is going to be a factor, and if you really look at it, I mean, if you take away the Panarin non-call. Pretty much both sides had things where you were like, wait a minute, how did this get called or how didn't this get called? Because you remember earlier in the game, T.J. Oshie got his stick up in Panarin's face on what should have been an obvious high sticking call that didn't get called.
True.
So the Capitals definitely got a break there.
Yep.
And I do think then the Obey-Kubel goal that led to a power play, that to me wasn't a hook either. So there were some questionable calls or non-calls both ways. But I do think, and to reiterate what you just said, at 5-on-5, they've given the Rangers everything if not more. And you didn't see any stretches in either of the two games, in my opinion, where it looked like the Rangers are so far superior that the Capitals are just hanging on for dear life. And the other thing, if they do get either one or both of Nick Jensen or Rasmus Sandin back in the lineup, that certainly is going to be a huge plus for this team as well, because if you break down the playoff experience on defense between what the New York Rangers have and what the Washington Capitals have come into with these first two games, it's laughable. All the experience, basically, is in John Carlson with, I think it was 123 games to start the series, and Trevor Van Riemsdyk with, I think it was like 32 games to start the series, where you had Vincent Iorio, first playoff game, Alexander Oleksiev, first playoff game, Dylan McIlrath, who wasn't with the team the entire year, has to get called up in the emergency, one other playoff game. You know, you just went up and down the lineup, and it was like a massive difference between the two sides. And the fact that the Capitals, we're not having a conversation based on the fact that, wow, did the Rangers really exploit that depleted Capital defense? Quite the opposite. I think they've really hung in there and held their own. It's just, as I said, the mistakes and giving the Rangers too many opportunities to cash in on those mistakes.
You alluded to Ovechkin. Why has he struggled in these first two games?
Well, part of it is, and again, you got to give credit, you know, to Peter Laviolette. This is a veteran coach. This is a guy who takes advantage of the matchup he is given. It's why people, you know, in hockey, and you've seen this over the years, sometimes home ice advantage is meaningless when it comes down to actually who wins these games. But when it comes down to having good coaches using every tool in their kit, home ice advantage and the ability to put the matchups out there you want, the last line change, is huge for good coaches. Peter Laviolette has used that with a much deeper New York Ranger defense to be able to get the type of matchups he wants against Alex Ovechkin, and that has been a factor. That being said, it's up to Alex to counter that. Alex has got to be more aggressive. There are times where we've seen Alex not scoring a goal or not coming away with, 8-10 shots, but I can't remember too many games where you don't see shots or hits. He affects the game one way or the other. If things are being taken away from him, then he gets into that bull in the china shop mode and makes the people pay for the tight checking on him. I haven't seen either of those yet, and that to me has been the surprise. It's one thing to say, yeah, he's facing a tough defensive structure that's limiting his time and space, but it's another thing to say, well, then on the other end, get in there on the forecheck and blow Vincent Trouba up, or Jacob Trouba up. Get in there on the forecheck and knock Vincent Trocheck off the puck and create a turnover. Things that we also see Alex Ovechkin doing. And again, that mistake last night on the power play, that's just something that can't happen. He's too veteran of a player to know that they're going to close on him, that they're going to really be quick on him. Put yourself in a more defensive posture as opposed to kind of trying to make the play when you didn't have control of the puck, and then suddenly it's a 3-on-1 the other way. That just was kind of an inexcusable mistake, and I expect to see a much different Alexander Ovechkin, and this will be the test for Spencer Carberry. You find the matchup that works best for you to find Alex Ovechkin some ice. That's what I think is going to be a real key to game 3.
Man, the pass back to Miller on that shorthanded goal was really pretty.
Right.
All right. So, by the way, you mentioned home ice advantage. How good is that atmosphere at Madison Square Garden?
My position isn't great, but it's right down there near the ice, and that's where you hear the decibel level. Three times, they have his name is John Brancy, and so if anybody wants to Google him, they introduce him as a Broadway star, and I can see why. He's got this unbelievable Broadway singing voice when he does the national anthem.
Yeah, it's
phenomenal.
And he
almost exaggerates it, and then he pauses between certain choruses, or certain verses, right? And then when there's that pause, then these Ranger fans you know, yell out. And it's three different times during the anthem. And right off the get-go, you know you're in someplace different. It's an electric atmosphere. That being said, you and I have been in Capital One Arena for various events when that atmosphere is equal. That the Capitals fans, or, you know, on times when there were huge Wizards games or whatever it was, a big college matchup, doesn't make any difference. There are times when those fans bring it as well. The difference is right now, though, from the get-go, before the Rangers need to be dragged into a game by the fans are already dragging into the game. That's what's got to happen on Friday night and on Sunday night. That fan base for the Capitals have got to make sure that Rangers understand, now we're going to drag our team in right off the get-go, and you're going to be fighting that all night long.
All right. Who do you want them to take quarterback tomorrow night?
I am on team Jaden Daniels. I just watch that guy at LSU. Listen, as you know, Kevin, I neither have the sources or the resources to do my own scouting.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. But when I look at Jaden Daniels, I'm like, come on. And that guy, to me, just looks so smooth. He can do so many different things. The touch on the deep throws, the ability to get out of trouble. I hear the debate, oh, he's too thin, he's too this, he won't withstand the pounding. I'll take my chances with Jaden Daniels.
At Real Smokin' Al on X on Twitter, Al has been in the DMV after living and growing up in St. Louis. He has been here now for 50 years. 50 years he's been in the market. He's done everything. Thanks for jumping on with me. I appreciate it.
Kevin, it's been too long. Always a pleasure talking with you, my friend.
Smokin' Al, everybody. Caps down 2-0 in their best-of-seven first-round series with the Rangers. Games 3 and 4 back here in D.C. at Capital One on Friday night and Sunday night. If they can snag one of those, they would force the series back to New York for Game 5 Wednesday night, a week from tonight. We are down to the final couple of shows, the final two shows to be specific, before we start doing shows knowing who the quarterback is going to be for the next couple of years. Jumping on with me right now is Ralph Vacchiano. Ralph is an NFC East reporter for Fox Sports. He's done a good job covering Washington, Dallas, Philly, and New York for the last few years. He was covering the Giants before that. But I have referenced some of Ralph's reporting over the last week and a half and thought I would get him on the show. So I want to start with what you know here as of, you know, 2:30 Eastern on the day before the draft in terms of Washington. And we can start with last week and all of the noise related to their top 30 visit format.
Sure. Well, I mean, the only thing I think we all know for 100% certain is they're staying at number 2 and they're taking a quarterback. Anything else, you know, a trade down, a different position would blow the minds of everybody in the NFL. The rest of the stuff around that is, there's some certainties, I think. You know, we're pretty sure that Jaden Daniels is going to be their guy. And, you know, there was not certainty about that last week because there was a little bit of a flap of about their top 30 visit. They had, as everybody knows, about 20 guys in at once for a top 30 visit. Not all that unusual to have a, you know, group top 30 visit, but what they did also was bring in 4 of the top quarterbacks, and that makes it a little unusual. Usually when you're talking about the guys at the top of the draft, they come in separately, especially the quarterbacks who you think you'd want to spend a lot of individual personal time with. But because it was unusual, it became a little bit of a thing. You know, from my understanding is they did not tell the players or the agents until very late in the process that they were going to have it as a group visit. I was told that a couple of the agents were, I don't know how to exactly phrase it. I would say angered, but that's probably a little harsh. Bothered, maybe miffed, that they didn't get enough notice to tell their guy, that their guy didn't get individual attention. But then I was told that Adam Peters, the Commander's GM, talked to them, explained his reasoning. They all, you know, hugged it out over the phone and everything was fine. And, you know, none of that. I can't tell you for sure exactly where these guys all want to go and what Jaden Daniels wants to do, but I can tell you for 100% certainty that nothing that happened there will scare off the Commanders and make them think, oh, geez, we better not take this guy because his agent was a little unhappy. you know, they're going to take the guy they like. And at this point, I'm pretty sure it's Jaden Daniels.
So I don't want to dwell on last week, but there's still some things that are interesting about last week, especially with what you just described, which is it was perhaps more driven by what they didn't know about the visit, that they were caught off guard, I guess, to a certain degree. Was it his agent, Butler, that had the biggest issue with it, or was it Jaden Daniels?
Well, that's a good question. I can't tell you that I've talked to Jaden Daniels, so I don't know for sure. You know, his agent hasn't talked about it publicly, but he did respond with that weird thinking emoji on Twitter, which sort of kind of clued everybody. There was a story or a video of somebody, Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, criticizing the Commanders group visit, and then Ron Butler retweeted that with a little emoji at the top, which made everybody kind of guess that he was unhappy. Was he unhappy? Yeah, that's my understanding. Was he unhappy for himself or expressing it for his client? That's hard to tell, and I don't know where the line is there. Jaden Daniels wants, if he's like anybody who's in the top of the draft, wants individual attention, wants his ego stroked a little bit. That wouldn't be unusual for an elite athlete. So being told, hey, you're one of a group, you know, at a time where he's probably thinking, you know, hey, you're picking a number two. If I'm your guy, you should be telling me I'm your guy, not making this a big open competition. He might be a little miffed by that, but I don't think anything was to the degree, you know, once that stupid little emoji went out and there was no explanation, it let imaginations run wild with how angry everybody really was.
Right.
I don't think it was ever to the point of, well, he doesn't want to play for Washington, because, you know, as somebody kept telling me, if he was really trying to send a message that he does not want Jaden Daniels to go to Washington, or that Daniels didn't want to go to Washington, it's the worst power play of all time, because nobody understood it. And the real way to express that would have been to tell him, you know what, we're not taking the visit now, and pull him out. And that would have made a bigger statement. So that didn't happen. And, you know, that to me made it feel like it's all just overblown.
Yeah. Look, I kind of feel a little bit silly continuing to talk about it, but you're the one that's had the actual reporting on it. And just to wrap it up, you know, as you said, that you had sources tell you that Adam Peters and Daniels' agent Ron Butler talked and settled any lingering issues. So why do you think, why are you confident that tomorrow night it'll be Jaden Daniels at number two for Washington?
Well, I have to be honest. Up until a few weeks ago, I wasn't at all. I really thought that they were undecided. I'm not sure I ever bought the noise about J.J. McCarthy. I think that there was a good reason to think that it was going to be Drake May, the North Carolina quarterback. I think they like him a lot, and I think they gave him serious consideration. But I can tell you that literally everyone I talk to around the NFL tells me it's going to be Daniels, and tells me that Daniels is clear-cut the number two quarterback prospect in this draft. I guess after I get told that enough, I start to believe it. I'd be lying if I told you that I've been told that by Adam Peters or Dan Quinn or somebody who would know for sure in Washington. I don't think that part has leaked out yet. I don't think, you know, sometimes you get it from the other side, but to my knowledge, Daniels and his agent do not know that for sure yet. So I think, you know, you might hear a little more solid reporting on that in the next 24 hours or so leading up to the draft. But right now, the world is convinced it's going to be Daniels. The world's convinced that that's the right choice. And, you know, that's what sort of got me on board. He's a good, explosive prospect with very few knocks on him. And, you know, you can make a case either way for him or Drake May. And you know, this just seems to be everybody's preference.
It's funny because yesterday and maybe even the day before to a certain extent, some of that J.J. McCarthy buzz and he's flying up the boards and maybe Washington sees in him Brock Purdy or Kirk Cousins, but you're not buying that at all.
No, I'm not. And, you know, I got to admit, I don't understand the whole J.J. McCarthy fascination. It has been
me neither.
Wild, wild ride. You know, if you go back to the end of the college football season, even heading into the college football playoffs, you would have had a hard time finding someone tell you he's a first rounder. And then, you know, not long after the college football championship, Jim Harbaugh said, don't be surprised if he's the first quarterback off the board, which stunned everybody. And then all of a sudden you asked around like, well, yeah, he is a first round prospect. And yeah, he could be top 15. And Before long, it's maybe even the Commanders at two, or you know, the Patriots at three. And now, as it gets closer to the draft, I have people telling me, you know, the Vikings like him, and they were trying to trade up for him, but now they might just sit tight at 11 and take him there. So it's really, his ride has been all over the map, and I you know, pretty much nothing would surprise me. But I don't think anybody thinks he's the second best prospect in the draft. And it's possible, could the Commanders surprise everyone and do that? Yeah, you know, Adam Peters was in San Francisco when they surprised everybody and took Trey Lance, when nobody thought that that was the guy they were going to take. Where they think they traded up to two or three to get him, whatever it was.
Three, yeah.
I guess there could be a surprise. I can never rule that out, but I think it would shock just about everybody in the NFL at this point if that was their choice.
You've been covering the NFC East for a while, and you said, as it relates to Jaden Daniels, that you'd be lying if you said that it was coming directly from the organization. This is a completely different organization than the one that was here before this regime, isn't it?
Yes, throughout. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, I know a lot of people have said, well, you know, in the old regime, you know, they had a lot more leaks. And that's probably true. Of course, the old regime was around for a little while. And, you know, this is new. Reporters are still getting to know the people in the organization, so they might not even know yet who to get good information from. You know, they're professionals. There were some big problems in the organization before. It was not ever, even before I was covering the NFC East, when I was just covering the Giants, really wasn't that hard to find people who would tell you what Washington was planning on doing. It's definitely not as easy as it was in the past. And, you know, it's not hard because they're picking two. There aren't a lot of options at two, so it's not really a ton of mystery, but you know, they're just handling it in a different way. And some of it's good. Some of it's very professional. Some of it is a little weird. Like the group visit of quarterbacks, you know, certainly got the attention of some people around the league for being different, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. It's just a different way of doing things. We all have to get used to that. It's definitely not the same old Commanders anymore.
All right. I want to switch subjects, but I want to stay in the division, Ralph. Are you thinking the Giants are going to take a quarterback here early in the first round, whether it's at six or a trade up?
I actually am not. I believe that they would like to take a quarterback. They would, and I think Drake May is the guy they would like. I think if he gets presumably past the Commanders to three, and if the Patriots are really willing to trade, the Giants will try to trade up for him. If the Patriots were to take, say, J.J. McCarthy and Drake May falls to four, I think the Giants would try to trade up for him there. Just sitting at six, though, assuming that they can't pull off a trade, which I'm very skeptical of them being able to do, I think they would probably decide to take a receiver and, you know, basically give Daniel Jones another year. You know, they're split in the organization. There are people in there that think we got to move on from Daniel Jones. We got to take a new quarterback. And there are people that think we've never really given him a chance with, you know, the receivers and the offensive line around us. We've got to build a better team. It's really, I don't know, that's 50-50, but it's enough of a split where they're really thinking about it hard. And you add in a trade up, might be too expensive for them. You know, if the right quarterback falls to six, sure, then they might do it. But I don't think one of the quarterbacks that they want is going to get that far.
Who in the organization's pro Daniel Jones and who's pro we got to draft a quarterback?
Well, my understanding is that the coach and the GM who did not draft Daniel Jones,
right,
although they did convince ownership to give him the big contract, you know, think that they should move on. They should take an opportunity to get a quarterback of their own that they can groom, that they can develop. They'll have, you know, hopefully in a year or two when Daniel Jones is off the books, they'll have the advantage of a quarterback on a rookie salary cap number. So they'd like to get their own guy, and they're really worried about Daniel Jones' injury history. Others in the organization, and there's people in personnel, and definitely I think the owner, kind of look at it as, you know, just a year ago we all believed in Daniel Jones, and you know, we did not put a good team around him. He was terrible in the six games he played, but he played those games without Saquon Barkley, without his left tackle. The offensive line was getting him killed. You know, we believed he had this ability. Let's have some stability here and give him a chance by building a better team around him. So, you know, I don't want to paint this as it's the GM versus the owner. I think they're the two more high-profile guys, as I understand it, who are sort of on opposite sides. And I know the owner is very adamant about it. Look, if the GM wants to do this, I'm going to let him do it. But there's a discussion going on, and it's, you know, it's deeper in the organization. I think I could probably find five or six people in there on each side and make a pretty strong case for why they think, you know, whatever they choose to do is the right thing to do.
Ralph, didn't they sign Tyrod Taylor back in 2022 in part because Dable wasn't a big believer in Daniel Jones?
I don't think that was the reason. I don't think they ever believed that he would be a replacement for Daniel Jones, certainly at his age. I think they were a little wary of Daniel Jones' injuries. You know, he was coming off a neck injury, and, you know, it was not, you know, serious enough to end his career, but serious enough to worry that it was going to be a recurring thing, which obviously had happened a second time. And they knew that when he went down in the year before under Joe Judge, the Giants just didn't have a really good backup quarterback, and they basically tanked the rest of the season. So Brian Dable's thing was, only bring in a quarterback that I know that is professional, and if Daniel Jones does get hurt, you know, at least it doesn't immediately ruin our season. We have somebody who can kind of keep the ship, you know, afloat for a little while. So, you know, wasn't necessarily, he didn't know Daniel Jones at that point. I can't say he was a believer in him, but he became a believer in him enough to, you know, back the contract, to, you know, 1 year later.
All right, last one, I promise. Penix Jr., does he get picked in the first round? And if so, where?
Boy, that's a good question. He has what scouts have told me is top 10 ability, but he has a very, very long injury history that you have to be really wary of. I do think he will go in the first round. I think one of the reasons for that is, you know, when you have a young quarterback, it's advantageous to get in the first round, to get a guy in the first round. You want to take advantage of the rookie salary at that position, but you also want to make sure that you have him for the extra year, which you get from a first-round pick. You get that extra, you know, year on his contract if you draft him in the first round as opposed to the second round. Where he could go is a good question. I think, you know, the Minnesota, you look at the teams that are looking for quarterbacks. The Minnesota Vikings, 11 might seem a little high, but they also have the 23rd pick. I could see them doing that there. You know, you get desperate when you need a quarterback, so sometimes you jump ahead. Maybe the Las Vegas Raiders at 13 might be interested. You know, there's the Seattle Seahawks at 16. It might be a long shot. I've heard the Rams, of all teams, really like him. They're at 19. I don't know that they would take him in the first round, but that's certainly a team to watch. So any of those teams, have, you know, to me, it's a chance because, again, I don't think they want to wait till the second round if you need a quarterback. And I do think people believe in his ability. It all just depends on what their doctors told them about his medical checkup.
Ralph Vacchiano, NFC East reporter for Fox Sports, at Ralph Vacchiano, VacchiAno, on X on Twitter. I really appreciate it. Thanks for doing this.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Ralph Vacchiano, Fox Sports, everybody, with some good information. We will get to Jay Gruden here momentarily, but before we get to Jay, a couple of stories that hit today, including Jaden Daniels was in Detroit with Drake May at a Special Olympics event. Detroit is the host of tomorrow night's draft. And he did a quick interview with reporters that were there. Sam Fortier transcribed this. Sam from the Washington Post, of course. Sam had a reporter question. There's speculation that you may not want to go to Washington. Do you want to just squash that? Jaden Daniels said, quote, I'm blessed to go wherever I'm called. Whoever calls my phone when the commissioner gets up and says my name, I'll be blessed, and they're going to get my all. Closed quote. The reporter then just said, to clarify, would you be okay being drafted by Washington? Yeah, 100%, Jaden Daniels said. So there was that today. Also, Scott Abraham from Channel 7 had an interesting tidbit last night. Josh Harris, the owner of the team, has the Philadelphia 76ers, a team that he also owns, in the NBA playoffs, and they play Game 3 tomorrow night in Philadelphia, down 2-0 in that very heated, if not controversial, series against the Knicks. And Scott Abraham found out that Josh Harris won't be at the 76ers game in Philadelphia, sitting in his courtside seat. He will be in Ashburn at the team's headquarters as the team gets ready to conduct its first draft under Josh Harris. Adam Peters, Lance Newmark, the whole gang will have the owner in the house tomorrow night. If you haven't had a chance to rate us or review us on Apple and Spotify, so helpful if you could take a moment to do that. 5 stars, they allow you to rate us on Apple and Spotify. That would be terrific if you see fit. A quick 1 to 2 sentence review on Apple helps us out a lot. This is a big week for anybody that does NFL content or NFL team content. Over the years, I've definitely seen a bump in listenership during this week. And for some of you, that means you're listening for the first time in a while, probably since the Super Bowl. And if you haven't rated or reviewed us, it would be a tremendous help if you did. Also, subscribe to the podcast. Also, follow us, which is real easy to do by hitting the plus button or the follow button on the Apple and Spotify Kevin Sheehan Show homepages. Jay Gruden with Jay's thoughts, not only on the quarterbacks, but we'll ask Jay about kind of how the whole process worked when he was here in Washington. We'll get to that right after these words from a few of our sponsors. Hey guys, if you're looking for a fun way to play daily fantasy sports, Prize Picks is the place to go to. I downloaded the Prize Picks app recently. It's exciting. It's easy. It's different when it comes to DFS. It's just you against the numbers. It's not you battling thousands of other players. It's picking more than or less than on 2 to 6 player stat projections with odds. Like the other night, I had Caitlin Clark less than 33 points and less than 6 3-pointers. It paid 3 to 1. The NBA playoffs are coming up. The NHL playoffs are coming up. Prize Picks offers so many different opportunities on a nightly basis. Right now, you can win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000. Prize Picks is America's number one fantasy sports app. Download the app today. Use my code Sheehan for a first deposit match of up to $100. That's the Prize Picks app. Download it today. Use my code Sheehan, S-H-E-E-H-A-N, for a first deposit match of up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more. Pick less. It's that easy. Hey guys, most of us are interested in our mental and physical well-being to a certain degree, and with that in mind, I'd like to welcome and introduce a new sponsor to the podcast. The new sponsor is Unified Healing. Unified spelled U-N-I-F-Y-D, Healing. It doesn't matter if you're a big-time world-class athlete or just a somewhat athletic podcaster like me. We all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring the podcast now. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in the DMV or anywhere else across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Well, go to unifiedhealing.com/Sheehan to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, spelled U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/Sheehan. No material or testimonies on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare providers with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
This segment of the show brought to you by Window Nation. Call them at 866-90-NATION or go to windownation.com. Mention my name and you'll get a free estimate, free in-home, no obligation quote. There's benefit to getting that free no obligation quote. The benefit is Window Nation will tell you which windows are too old or too broken and need to be replaced versus those that don't. And if you act now and you end up purchasing windows from Window Nation, buy two, get two free is the offer with no payments and no interest for 2 full years. So you're paying half price on the windows with no payments and no interest charged for 24 months. Call them at 866-90-NATION. Go to windownation.com. Mention my name. Again, they'll take good care of you, starting with a free estimate so you've got nothing to lose. Jay Gruden is with us today as we approach the 2024 NFL draft. Jay is actually really kind to do this because he's taking some vacation time out in Cabo playing some golf and doesn't feel great. But I appreciate this and you getting up early West Coast time to do this with me. I do want to talk about the quarterbacks, of course, but I also want to find out a little bit about the process of evaluating quarterbacks and just the draft process as a whole when you were involved in it here in Washington. But first of all, let me just ask you, have you gotten to the point where you're just a bit exhausted by all of the conversation around this draft and the quarterbacks specifically?
Yeah, I think you are too in the building about now. This is where I think it's time that everybody's just taking a step back to probably come in early this morning and just talk about their later round picks, rank the board one more time, and then go home and then be ready to come back Thursday night after a nice dinner before the draft. But this is a grind on a lot of people, you know, the scouts, obviously the GMs, the coaches, the assistant coaches, everybody involved put a lot of time and work in as they should anyway, because this is a very critical time of the year.
So this is actually, you're wrapped up at this point, the day before the draft.
You should be. I think there might be some guys, like I can remember with Scott McLuhan and some other guys, we try to fiddle with the board a little bit up mid to later round picks. Like I try to get, they might have had them in the sixth or seventh round. I try to get them boosted up to the fifth or fourth round, just little things of that nature. A couple last minute arguments. But it was fun. It's fun because, you know, everybody has their own input. You got the scouts who did the area. You got the GM. You got, you know, the coaches and the position coaches. And, you know, you just, you're not going to see eye to eye with everybody, but you got to just make sure that you try to get them in the right spot where they're going to be taken. So if they're available
and you like him, you get him.
You wanted Matt Ioannidis. Where you guys ended up taking him, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I wanted Matt. We had him as a priority free agent. And I said, this guy is, you know, he's team captain at Temple. He plays his ass off. He can stop the run. He's an adequate pass rusher. He's not like, you know, Warren Sapp or Aaron Donald, for God's sakes. But he's a good role player. He's a rotational defensive lineman to get in the fifth round. Big bodies like that are hard to find. And he played pretty good for us. And they went and got a free agent contract to Carolina. I don't know if he's still playing or not. But, you know, those are guys that you got to have in your fifth and sixth round. It's very hard. If you look around the draft, just go back to last year's draft. Look at every team's fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh rounders. Not many of them are producing. You know, the ones that hit on those, it makes a big difference in your roster and your football team. So you got to take your time on those guys and don't just throw a dart at the dartboard and try to guess. Make sure you do your due diligence and have a reason for why you want a guy.
But when you said when Scott McLuhan was here, you guys were still fiddling with the board, you know, a day out, was Matt Ioannidis the example you were thinking of?
Yeah, Ioannidis, and then when Scott left, we had a couple other guys. We moved up the board. That happens all the time, and some guys want to move guys off the board. Like, I've had some players or quarterbacks or players that I thought couldn't play, and I'm like, why are we having them in the third round? We got to get this guy back to the sixth. So, you're not right all the time, but you got to have those conversations because it's important.
You know, people have said this about you, that as far as coaches go, you are an excellent talent evaluator. You know, we've talked about this before. You've told me that you loved doing that part of the job in addition to coaching. What made you good at it?
I think being around different leagues helped me out a lot. You know, I could see a guy, I could say, this guy couldn't play for me in the Arena League. You know what I mean? Why we got him in the third round? So I think playing in different leagues at different levels, you know, playing football with guys and coaching with my brother and then coaching the Arena League, coaching in the UFL with guys that aren't quite good enough to make it, really helped me out a lot. And obviously, just watching. I have a thing for watching every position very closely and take a lot of time doing it. And it was the most fun part from the work standpoint of the job was the draft, in my opinion, because you have to watch the Senior Bowls, the East-West Shrine Games, you have to see all the practices. And you find a diamond in the rough every now and then, and it's a grind, but it's a fun part. It's very important, obviously. I mentioned before the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh rounders. You know, if you can hit on a couple of those, it makes a difference.
What was your best personnel call? Where, you know, whether it was Bruce or McLuhan or Kyle Smith, took your advice and it worked out?
Oh shoot, I don't know. You know, the obvious ones were, I think we're all pretty much in agreement on, you know, obviously, Daron Payne. Vita Vea was right there. If he would have not been drafted, we would have taken Vita Vea. I wanted Daron Payne, but we got Daron Payne. Obviously, Jonathan was easy. I actually was wrong on that one. I wanted Reuben Foster. I thought Daron Payne would be gone. And Jonathan Allen would be gone.
Right.
But he fell right to us. So we had Jonathan rated ahead of Reuben, so that was an easy pick for us. We took Jonathan, thank goodness. Reuben had some injuries and didn't work out. But, I don't know. I mean, the linebacker from North Carolina, who I liked, I moved up the draft.
Cole Holcomb.
Cole Holcomb. That's probably one of my better ones because we had him as just a free agent grade, and I moved him all the way up to the fifth. You know, linebackers that can run 4.45 and have 100 tackles 3 years in a row, I think are worthy of being moved up to the fifth round because worst case scenario, he's going to be really good on special teams. And he's going to be a good role player, backup. He could play nickel, dime, and cover. So probably that one. But there are other arguments within that, like, you know, you have, and you're like, this guy's way better than a sixth rounder, and it's area scouts are saying they're arguing, and then he gets, and I used to bet some of them that he'd get drafted in the third or fourth round, and sure enough, he'd get picked in the third round. And that's the fun stuff about it. You just never know. You know, you never know what other teams think about other guys. You just got to do your work and communicate with the scouts that did them and communicate, understand where he came from and what type of guy he is, what kind of work ethic. You got to know about from the strength coaches. Does he like the weight room? Nowadays, it's even more difficult because these guys are getting paid and, they're prima donnas. And if they don't like what they see at their college, they just jump in the portal and transfer. So it's a major concern with new players coming out, I believe. It's a whole different breed of character. It's going to be very difficult in the evaluation process moving forward. Some guys play on three different teams already. And it's going to be hard to evaluate. You're going to have three different coaches to talk to. Two coaches will say he's lazy, he's a quitter. No, one coach will say he's great. So it's going to be a tough process moving forward for all these evaluators to evaluate.
Yeah, that's a good point. The number of people that you have to talk to now that these players have played at so many more schools because of Portal and NIL.
Yeah, it used to be one school.
Yeah.
You talk to the strength coach, you talk to the offensive coordinator, you talk to the head coach, and you're done. Now it's three different schools. That'll be tough.
The strength coach, by the way, you're not the first person that's sort of emphasized that. I've heard many times that the strength coach is the one that will really know more than any other about a player's work ethic, his work habits. Is that true?
Yes, it's very important because once you get them in the building here, you got to make sure their body continues to develop. Some of them might be a little undersized from a upper body, and they can get bigger in the lower body. They can get stronger and faster, but they got to work at it. If they don't work at it, they're not going to get bigger and stronger, so you take them off the board. You know what I mean? If you're not going to work at it in college when you're a young man developing, you're not going to work at it in the NFL when you get paid. So work ethic is very critical in the weight room, and we try to talk to as many strength coaches as possible. And most of the time you can tell, at the combine, they take their shirt off. That's why they take their shirt off at the combine, standing in underwear. They're trying to show their physique and what kind of work they put in. They have a little pot belly and skinny barrel chest, and you're probably going to say, this guy.
Yeah.
But strength coach is important because they'll talk like me.
Yeah, like me. You had mentioned, by the way, previously when you mentioned when you talked about Reuben Foster, you said Reuben Foster's tape was one of the best defensive player tapes you had ever looked at.
Yeah, I said linebacker wise, I said Jalen Smith was number one out of Notre Dame, and he snapped his knee in half in the bowl game, and
right.
Then Reuben was right there after it, sideline to sideline, making plays, physicality, just energy. Talking to Coach Saban and the type of leader he was, the alpha dog that you want on your show. We never really had that alpha dog on defense, which I was just dying to get.
Right.
You know what I mean? And linebacker position was so critical. We just had so many different moving parts of linebacker. Mason Foster, we tried to get in as a Band-Aid. And we started with Perry Riley and a bunch of other guys. We tried just – we never got it right, the linebacker. Will Compton did some good things for us, but I never had that alpha dog at linebacker. Reuben was that type of guy. And he's like the Pied Piper, I was hoping anyway. And ended up not getting him, but it worked out because we got Johnson, and Johnson's been a good leader for him, a good player for him, obviously.
Right. Well, you did get him eventually, and you said, and I think it was the first day of OTAs or first day of minicamp or whatever it was. By the way, I think he's playing.
Yeah, I was excited for that one.
I think he's in the UFL playing really well.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, I still talk to him every now and then. He's in the UFL. The first play of OTAs, he ran through the B-gap on a naked bootleg and stepped on Tyler Catalina's foot. I heard a scream, and you never want anybody to get hurt, but I was like, oh, no, I can tell that's Reuben, and sure enough.
Of McLuhan, Bruce, Kyle, who took your advice the most? Who leaned on you the most?
I think Kyle, probably. And McLuhan did, too. But McLuhan, Scott was a good evaluator. He worked at it. He was set in his ways. He came from a different, place in San Francisco and Seattle and all that, so he really – had his network talking to those people out there. I kind of beat to my own drum. I didn't really call other teams and say, hey, do you like this guy or not? I just based it on my own opinion and what the scouts told me about him and the character and all that stuff. But Kyle worked extremely well with me. I love Kyle because he was very adamant of guys he liked and didn't like. And he had a reason for it. As long as you have a reason for why you like a guy or don't like a guy, I'm good with it. And sometimes you can sway me. I'll listen to what you say. But me and Kyle had the best relationship, I think. Scott was fine. Bruce is Bruce. Bruce is a computer. He's an internet evaluator. So he'll get all his evaluations off the internet somehow. I don't know what the hell how he does that, but yeah.
Yeah. All right. So
the internet evaluators will get you killed.
Yeah, right. Basically reading other people's evaluations of the player. Or looking
exactly
at highlight
right.
tapes.
Yep.
What did you make of the top 30 visit, at Top Golf, noise last week, the way Washington handled it?
That was a little unique. I think this is a very important pick, obviously. You can't put the emphasis of the importance of this pick, this number two pick. And they have a couple different options. And I don't know the kids at all. And maybe it's just another way. They've done all their evaluations on them. Maybe they feel like they have their rankings already set. Caleb being one, they had 2, 3, and 4, and now they just want to put them out there in a social setting and just see how they communicate and work together with other people, which isn't a bad thing. If it's close between two players and one guy is just a great leader out there and taking charge of the thing, and the other guy is just in the corner on a cell phone with his agent, you know, I mean, that could tip the tides. I mean, I don't know. I think it's a pretty good idea, really, but and hopefully they got them in the office and did some football, too, before they went to Topgolf.
Right. I was going to ask you, how important are those top 30 visits? How were they handled when you were in Washington?
Oh, I loved them. Yeah, I loved them. It was important for those guys to get with your trainer, number one. That's why you bring them in there, because there might have been a recheck on a knee or an ankle or a past shoulder injury or whatever it might be. So that's the first reason you bring them in there. Then you want to get them with the position coach for a little while, just talk some ball and see how they hit it off. And then I get them, offensive coordinator gets them, I get them, or defensive coordinator, and then I get them for a while. And, you know, we watch some tapes together. We might, quarterbacks, we might have sent them a playbook, like about a 45-play playbook, and let them study it and then come here and grill them on the questions and have them get on the board and just see how he, you know, can talk football with us and does he understand concepts and what is he trying to do. Some guys are a lot further along than other guys when it comes to, you know, football-wise, plays, concepts, protections, and all that stuff. And you just got to understand that. It's not their fault. It's the way they've been coached. So you just got to try to get a feel for them as people and communicators and what they're like to be around and what kind of football knowledge they have and what kind of football passion they have.
Is there an example of a player that was in for a top 30 visit that you remember that really changed the opinion on him one way or the other?
I wouldn't say. I mean, yeah, there was, but, you know, obviously, yeah.
What?
You know, we had a couple of guys that changed in a positive way. Like, I can remember Jared Stidham came in here. He was off the charts as far as drawing up plays and communicating. He's now the starting quarterback for the Broncos, maybe.
Right.
They'll try to get somebody else to replace him. But you know, he went from like a fifth rounder to a second or third rounder, in my book, in that meeting, just talking to him and his ability to communicate and understand football and protections and all that stuff. I mean, he was good. But, you know, it's just, you just go back in time and, you know, A.J. Brown was an interesting guy. I mean, we had him in here. He came in to recheck for his injuries, and he's a lot smarter. He's a smart son of a gun. And some of these guys, you just don't know on tape how smart they are when it comes to football and until you get them in the building. So you hear things about them. Maybe they're lackadaisical. Maybe they don't know football that well. They line up on one side because he can't learn the other side. That's because they're in no huddle. That's what they're taught. It's not because they can't learn it. So you get them in there and you realize that this guy is a very intelligent person and football player. So you got it. That's why you have the meetings.
You focused on those that, you know, changed your mind for the positive. I guess you don't want to mention those that changed your mind for the negative.
Yeah, no. I mean, in some of them, even though they might change your mind to the negative, they just might not be a good in social settings like that. You know, they might not just be comfortable.
Right.
You know, the pressure of those things, and they might be a little bit intimidated. But once they get the ball in their hand on the field and they start tackling and running and playing football, they turn into different people. And you got to understand that as well. Does the tape match his personality? I mean, maybe, you know, because, you know, I was kind of a shy guy when I, you know, came up, and I probably wouldn't have fared too well in these meetings and combine interviews, you know, but I get out on the practice field and different people react differently in live situations when it comes to football than in social situations.
Yeah, that's so true.
Talking about the quarterback position and maybe a receiver that has to move around. You got to know a linebacker that has to call the defense, a safety that has to, you know, communicate rotations and motions and all that stuff. I think you got to at least display some kind of football intelligence, and that's where it comes in play. If it's a 3 technique or a 5 technique or a 7 technique defensive end, you know, that's probably on the back burner. Let's see if he can rush a passer.
2019, you just mentioned A.J. Brown and how much he impressed you in his top 30 visit. That's the draft. Obviously, you guys took Dwayne. We've gone through that ad nauseum over the years. Montez traded back into the first round to take him, but it was Terry in the third round. If you had kept your second round pick, was A.J. Brown a possibility?
Oh, A.J. Brown was top of our, yeah. A.J. Brown was our top receiver in that draft for sure. But we love Terry. Terry was great. Terry, the Senior Bowl, I think, outplayed everybody. And the way he worked, you know, another work guy. You know, when you talk to the coaches at Ohio State, you talk to us, I mean, this guy is off the charts. He's a team captain for 2 years. So you knew coming in the building, you got yourself a war daddy when it comes to preparation and work ethic. So that was an easy pick in the third. I mean, I wouldn't have been upset if we took him in the second, if we had a second round pick.
All right, let's talk about this draft. So, first of all, is there a position group other than quarterback that you're really interested in this draft?
I've only done really quarterbacks and receivers. I hear it's not a great draft for running backs, but you can always find a running back, I think, fourth to sixth round if you need one. A lot of teams do need one. You just got to figure out what kind of back you need. Is it a pounder? Is it a more of an outside the edge of the pass receiver, third down back? So you got to make sure you hone in on the type of player you want at that position when you draft one. You don't want to draft a 240-pound running back when you need a third down specialist. So, but receivers are going to be interesting just because there's a lot of pretty good ones, and every year it seems like there is, and not many of them pan out. You know, just I'm interested because some guy at Texas ran a 4.21 or whatever it is, but he's little, he's skinny, and not many guys that have run fast like that, that are little like that, have really produced. You know, other than maybe a DeSean Jackson and a couple other guys like that. So just got to be careful in your evaluations. I like the bigger receivers personally in this draft. I like the Xavier Leggett guy. He's a big sucker in the second round, maybe.
Right.
I can get him from South Carolina. I just like he can return kicks. But the guys from LSU, they're interesting, obviously. It's a good draft for receivers, but just got to be careful. Make sure you know what role they're going to play. When you draft a little receiver that's not very strong, he's not going to be a force in the running game. He's not good at block safeties or all that stuff. So he could be a one-trick pony lined up outside. He's got to be good enough to line up outside, win consistently. And I don't see a lot of guys doing that are 180 pounds or less in this draft.
I mean, Tariq Hill would have been a guy that I would imagine when he emerged, maybe some of the thinking on little guys changed a little bit or not.
Yeah, but he's stocky. He's like a fire hydrant.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, he's different. You know what? I didn't even evaluate Tyreek Hill. I think we had him off the board for whatever reason. I don't know if it was injury or character or whatever. I'd never even saw Tyreek Hill.
All right, let's talk about the quarterbacks. What's your process for evaluating these quarterbacks? Like, take us through what Jay Gruden does when he's evaluating a quarterback for a draft.
Well, first you look at the numbers, you know, the stats and all that stuff, and where he's played at, how many games he started, how many games he's played, where he's played at. So you get a good general idea for his production, his win-loss rate at college, all that stuff. So the analytic part of it you look at first. Okay, this guy's a 68% completion guy. He started out his year, he's 62 now. He moved up to 75%, so he's gotten better. Yards per attempt, all that stuff. You look at the stats, and you got to click on the tape, and you got to watch him from start of his career. You watch a few games, start of his career, then you watch this whole entire season. I like to start from the beginning of the season to the end of the season, see if he's getting better with the same concepts. Is he more comfortable? Is he still making the same mistakes? All that stuff. And then, you know, the evaluation. And then if they play in a Senior Bowl, obviously the combine is very important. And then you try to, you know, talk to the coaches and all that good stuff and continue your evaluation with the meetings and the 15-minute meeting at the combine and then the 30-man visit at home and try to make your evaluation. It's very tough because just look back the last 10 years, how many guys have not panned out. And you don't have the time with these guys anymore because they got to play and they're not ready to play and people give up on them. And people say, oh, you drafted a bust. How can you make that mistake? Well, you know, there's going to be some mistakes in this draft. I promise you that.
Yeah, there are in every draft. I mean, it's a less than 50% hit rate on the first round in terms of players that get a second contract. But specific to Jay, like the things that you look for when you're watching a quarterback, you know, play one of his games in his final year in college that you have to see, or something that you see that's a big no-no in terms of something that would be translatable. Like, is footwork, mechanics,
pressure,
accuracy?
Pressure for me is number one. Pressure, obviously arm talent. You got to see the arm talent. If you're looking at him for first, second, third round, they're going to have arm talent pretty much. How it comes out of his hand. But I like to look at pressure, how he handles pressure. You know, does he squat in the pocket and look for running lanes and lose vision downfield? Is he, is he scared of the pass rush? Does he step up into throws when people are coming at him? Does he deliver under pressure? How he handles pre-snap communication? Audibles, does he audible at all? Does he look at the sideline for his coach to make the call every time, or can he handle the audibles? So, there's a lot of stuff you look at pre-snap, post-snap. But I really like pressure when he gets blitzed and how he handles that, because that's what's going to happen in the NFL, whether it's a three technique making your guard whiff or it's an all-out blitz by Brian Flores and the Minnesota Vikings. So there's a lot of different areas that you have to understand. It's very important for quarterbacks to handle pressure and what they do with the ball, how the ball security is. Does he throw it up for grabs when he gets pressured? Does he, protect it? Does he make good, sound football decisions when things aren't perfect? It's easy for quarterbacks in a three-man rush to throw a hitch route outside because it's cover three, But I want to see rotations get him, go through his first, second, and third progression, how he works his feet in the pocket, and how he handles pressure.
So of the quarterbacks that we're talking about in the draft, Caleb Williams is going to go one to Chicago. I think we all understand that. So let's talk about May, Daniels, McCarthy, Penix Jr. Which of those four quarterbacks, because you've watched a lot more since we last spoke, which of those four handles pressure the best and which of those four handles pressure the worst?
Well, Drake May is the biggest. They didn't handle pressure very well in North Carolina. Their offensive line wasn't very good. But he's a big guy. He can escape all that stuff. Jaden takes some unnecessary sacks from time to time. But obviously his speed can get him out of trouble that others can't. It won't happen for other quarterbacks. So he's got an elite trait in that speed of getting away from pressure. But he will take some sacks that maybe other guys won't take. JJ didn't really have a whole lot of pressure situations. Honestly, he was in the lead a lot. They ran the ball a lot. They didn't have a lot of third and longs. When he did, he handled it pretty well, but he's sight unseen pretty much. So he's a wild card in the draft. How is he going to handle? How is he going to be down when they're down 14 as a known passing situation? In 2 years at Michigan, there weren't many games where he was down and had to throw it. So that's a key also. LSU, they had to score every time they had the ball because their defense was so bad. And North Carolina is kind of similar. They just couldn't protect. But Michael Penix is interesting because, they say he's not a mobile quarterback, but he ran 4.5 at the combine. And he's only sacked nine times out of 3,000 attempts. So he's obviously got some pocket awareness, and he can handle pressure. And he throws it off his back foot, and he can deliver the ball on time and accurately despite, some pressure situations. Michigan kind of put a number on him, obviously. He didn't play very well against them, but other games he handled it pretty well. So they all have their positives. I could talk all four of those guys up and convince you to take them at number two, and I could probably come up with some reasons why you don't even want to draft them in the first round. So they're all a crapshoot. You just got to figure out. That's why these individual meetings are very important to get to know them, what kind of football intellect they have, what kind of leaders they're going to be, and make sure you have your plan in place. If you got Jaden Daniels, how are you going to handle him? Are you going to run between the tackles with him like Josh Allen? I don't know. Obviously, his own reads and all that are going to be good. Drake May can do all that stuff. He's a physical guy. JJ is going to be a little bit limited in that regard. Obviously, Penix is going to be limited. So you got to have a plan as the offensive coordinator. If you draft Michael Penix Jr., hey, we're going to be a drop-back team, spread team, and rip it down the field. That's what you want with him. And then, obviously, JJ is more of a ball control type guy. And then, obviously, Jaden's a wild card. We can run the zone reads. We can do a lot of different things with the quarterback under center, getting them outside the pocket. Some fun stuff with him. So that's why I said Jaden probably is a pick, because there's more things he can do offensively, and I think he'll help your running game more with Austin Eckler and Brian Robinson Jr., because people got to count for him on every play, because if you don't, it's not a zone read or it's not a scramble for 5 yards and out of bounds. It's a 35, 40-yard game. So I would probably err on the side of that just because of the running game benefit that you have with Jaden.
So that was the next question. What's your – you're on the clock for Washington at number two. Caleb Williams has gone one, and it sounds like you would take Jaden Daniels.
Yeah, I probably would. I like the way he's improved since Arizona State. He's gotten better in the pocket. He's getting more comfortable. He had great receivers at LSU, which is great. I think those guys helped him become a better passer and a more patient passer, more of a passer than a runner from within the pocket. They helped him get better, and I think Jaden helped those guys get better. So I like that part of his game. And from Arizona State to LSU, he's gotten a lot better. His completion percentage has gotten better. His ball placement's got better. He doesn't have the pop in his arm like Caleb Williams. He doesn't have the arm talent that Drake May has, but he can get the ball out there good enough, and he has that elite skill in running the football. Just a matter of, can he stay healthy for 17 games? Because for him to be successful, he's going to have to run, and he's going to get hit. And you know, you just hope the best. You just hope that he handles, you know, when he gets about to get hit, the slide and get out of bounds when he can, and not take the huge hit.
So you just answered the next question. Your big concern about him. Who would be after Jaden?
I would probably, you know, I don't know. JJ's too much of a wild card for me. Obviously, he's more ready. JJ's kind of like when I evaluated Andy Dalton. Andy Dalton had 3 good years at TCU, 3.5 years at TCU. Didn't make many mistakes. Pretty accurate with the football. They did a lot of things under center, in the shotgun. They were more pro football ready at TCU. That's why we wanted him bad in the second round, because, you know, he didn't have the flashy arm talent. He didn't have the great speed, but he had nuisance speed. He could get himself out of trouble, and he knew he could handle a lot of information, and that's going to be important as well. As far as pre-snap recognition, getting your team in the right run play, bringing the tight ends in for pass protection, or moving your back, or readjusting the mic in pass protection to protect himself. So that's a critical part of the game, and if he has enough arm talent, then I would probably err on the side of J.J., and then I'd probably take Drake May for his upside. I'd rather take Drake May if I had a quarterback in place. It might have been like 35, 38 years old. It might be on his last 2 years of his contract. Let him develop a year or two, work on his fundamentals, because his accuracy is an issue right now. I don't think he's quite ready to start a game right now. I'd love to get him in the building and have him sit for a year or two and then just watch him progress and work with him. And then obviously Penix Jr., you know, the two knee injuries, you can't overlook those two knee injuries at Indiana. But he's a gifted passer. If I had a great receiving group, you know, like Miami down with Tyreek Hill and Waddle, he'd be a guy I'd look at, because he's a great drop-back passer. And he gets to put the ball out there more accurately. Despite his percentage being lower than these guys, he's an accurate passer down the field. They push the ball down the field more than most teams in college football.
On Drake May, real quickly, is the stuff that concerns you that would make you err on the side of sitting him for a year and preferring to have him, say, in a Jordan Love situation behind Aaron Rodgers for a couple of years? Are those issues, would you be confident that you could fix them?
Yeah, he has enough talent that I think it'd be worth taking him. Like, if I'm, you know, like New England, if they want to play Jacoby Brissett for a year and just let Drake sit down, and maybe he hits it, maybe you hit a home run with him. You see him at training camp and OTAs, and he's just ripping it. And holy cow, he's a lot more accurate than we thought. He's going to beat out Jacoby right now. Hell yeah, let's go. But, you know, playing a veteran for a year and letting the guy sit and listen to the terminology and understand offense, because these guys are coming into a whole new offense with different words, different verbiage, different terminology. Different protections. Everything is different for these guys, and it's going to be—it's a grind on a young player. And Drake's only 21 years old, so yeah, I would really like him for Drake to sit for a year. Penix has played more football. He's like 22, 23 years old. He's played 5 years, two at Indiana, I think 3 at Washington. So he might be more ready from that standpoint than Drake. And then obviously Jaden's played 5 years, and you know, they had a pretty good offense. Messmeyer's a good offensive coordinator there at LSU. They did some good pro concepts, so he might be ready as well. But you just never know. Kevin, you just never know on some of these guys until you get them in your building and watch them with the offense.
All right, we'll wrap it up with this. Two quick questions to end. First of all, I'm assuming that, Caleb, you know, going back to the first time we talked about this, you said Caleb Williams. He's your number one, right, overall?
Yeah, he's got the best arm talent. Not really close. The way the ball comes out of his hand and effortless from different arm angles, accuracy. Yeah, he just got a lot of work. I mean, I could hammer him if you wanted me to with his ball security and taking so many sacks and always trying to make a big play when nothing's there. He just got to understand that sometimes it's okay to throw it away. Just protect the football. Let's live to fight another day. It's okay to punt. You know, at USC, they had a horrific defense, and he probably felt like, hell, if we don't score on this drive, we're going to be down 2 touchdowns. And that probably has a lot of impact on your decision-making also. So you got to rein him in a little bit, but you also have to understand what makes Caleb is his ability to escape. But he's going to make some humongous plays because of his ability to escape and throw off platform. But he's got to rein it in a little bit and make sure he protects the ball. Over 30 fumbles in his career is not good, so we just got to get that honed in a little bit.
Beyond the quarterbacks, tell me a player or two that you really like in this draft.
I mentioned Xavier Leggett, you know, just as a big guy in the second round or so. There's a lot of receivers, like I mentioned, they're smaller, they can run faster, but this is a big guy that can, I think, can really help you in the running game. He'll dig out safeties. And I keep mentioning this, that the success of Christian McCaffrey is obviously he's a great back, but they have three receivers that are physical that can block. Debo, Ayuk, Juwan Jennings, these guys will get after you. And that's important. All these bubble screens and all these perimeter runs and things of that nature. You got to have receivers that are willing to block and that are big and physical. That's why I err on the side of the physical receivers a little bit more so. If I had my choice between that and a guy that's 5'10", 175 that runs a 4.3, I'd probably err on the side of a bigger guy just because, you know, throughout the course of a football game, you know, you're going to have 30 to 35 runs. And who's going to be in there blocking for him? You know, you got to have somebody, some physicality in your room. And I think he provides that. It's just for a late round sleeper, the receivers I've done, and not a late round, but a middle round sleeper like Xavier, I think it'd be interesting to have. I don't know him as far as his mental abilities and how he handles, you know, terminology and all that stuff. But just from a skill standpoint, I like where he's at.
Appreciate this a lot. Go hit him straight today.
I'll try. Thanks, Kevin.
Jay Gruden, everybody, at @coach_JayGruden on X, on Twitter. Jay's a good follow. We'll get one more opinion on today's show about the draft, and this one will come from a quarterback, a college quarterback, Scott McBrien. That's next, right after these words, from a few of our sponsors. Hey guys, I want to tell you about Harry's. Many of you have probably heard of Harry's razors and shaving products, maybe even from this podcast. They've been an occasional advertiser over the years. I'm a customer. I have been for a while now. I think it goes back to the first shipment of product that they sent me before the first time they advertised on the pod, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. They found a way, Harry's did, to make a beautifully designed razor for a fraction of the price of other big brands. I've been using their Truman handle. It's a two-tone handle with a great grip. It provides a close shave no matter if you've got a beard and you're shaving around it, or if you cleanly shave on a daily basis. Their German-engineered blades stay sharp for a long period of time. They've got customizable delivery options for scheduled refills for as low as $2. That's half of what you pay other big brands. Right now, you can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/Sheehan. Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, and this is a no-risk trial. If you don't like your shave, no worries. It's on them. Convenient subscription options exist that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/Sheehan. That's harrys.com/SHEEHAN for a $3 trial set.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle, a run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
This segment of the show brought to you by MyBookie. Go to MyBookie.ag, use my promo code KevinDC, and MyBookie will give you a cash bonus on your initial deposit. MyBookie's got everything you need for the NFL draft right now. The odds for the second overall pick, Jaden Daniels going number two, and the odds are climbing. Right now, he is at minus 526, an overwhelming favorite to go number two overall. This is the biggest favorite he has been. That means to win $100, you've got to wager $526. You've got to risk $526 to win $100. Drake May's at plus 400. If you like Drake May, $100 will win you $400. But Jaden Daniels now really a heavy favorite to go number two overall tomorrow night. MyBookie.ag, promo code KevinDC. Jumping on with me right now is a quarterback to talk about quarterbacks. Scott McBrien played at Maryland from 2001 to 2003. Two great seasons under Ralph Friedgen. Two bowl seasons where the Terps won big in the Peach Bowl over Tennessee. I was there that night. That was awesome. Also destroyed West Virginia, which was a former school of Scott McBrien's, in the Gator Bowl one New Year's Day. That was a lot of fun. Scott was such a good quarterback in college. Played in the NFL with the Packers for a little bit. Played in the CFL as well. But he joins me right now to get his perspective on the quarterbacks. He's a huge Skins fan, huge Washington Commanders fan. He's following the draft specific to the quarterbacks. And first of all, let everybody know how you're doing, because it's not like you're one of those guys out in the media all the time.
Well, I'll tell you what, Johnny Holiday is always trying to get me in the booth. So who knows? Maybe I'll be back in the media one of these days. But, I appreciate you having me on, Kevin. It's good to come back on the air here and talk to you a little bit about some quarterback play. All's good on my end, you know, just staying busy, keeping my four kids under control. We're in tournaments every weekend. It never stops. You know how it is. You've been there, done that.
Yeah, these are the years, man. Enjoy them. They fly by really quickly. So tell me right now, if you were Washington on the clock at two, who they should take.
Oh, my God. What a deep question you're going to come out of the gates with. That's a tough question. Obviously, if I had all the answers, I'd be getting paid the big bucks. There's some solid quarterbacks on the board, as we know. Everybody knows about Caleb, right? What a tremendous player. Got a little bit of an inside scoop with Caleb, one of his former quarterback coaches, who actually coached me at DeMatha, Chris Balsh. I've talked to him about Caleb before. He worked out Caleb and was a part of his life for many years, especially as a high school kid. And, you know, from him, you know, hearing the type of talent that Caleb has, I mean, hearing it from him saying that kid can make any throw on the planet. And he's seen a lot of quarterbacks come through his day, from the Tim Strachans to, you know, he coached me back in the day, and he's coached many other quarterbacks around the area. But Caleb is a special talent, once-in-a-generation talent, and he definitely has all the tools to be that number one pick. He can lead a football team, as we've seen it, at the collegiate level. Can he do it at the NFL level? Yeah, I think he can, Kevin. It's going to be fun to watch him grow and mature at that next level. It's really hard to pass up Caleb. It really is. I know you got Drake May, you got Jaden Daniels. For me, as a Skins fan,
yeah, assume we've got to assume probably that Caleb Williams goes to Chicago number one.
Yeah.
So they're on the clock, and Caleb Williams is gone. So who are you taking?
Yeah, I think I've got to take Jaden Daniels. I really do. People are going to talk about Drake May, obviously a great talent as well. We've seen Sam Howell. We've seen what the ACC is about. I just feel like Jaden Daniels is a solid player who can do it all. He can make the throws. I've watched film on him. I actually watched his pro day. Some of the throws that he was making were absolute silly throws, on the run, off the back foot, across his body. And the guy has true talent, and he can run. He can move, right? He can avoid the rush, and he can pick up a first down with his feet. So if I'm Washington, I think I've got to go Jaden Daniels.
Is there anything in watching him at LSU that concerns you at the pro level?
Well, here's one thing that we can talk about, right? He likes to use his feet, right? And he's not afraid to take a hit. He's not afraid to pick up a first down with his feet, scramble, and dip his shoulder and try to get a first down. That can be scary. We saw that happen with RG3, right? RG3 liked to move with his feet, and, sometimes it cost him. Jaden Daniels needs to learn how to wave the white flag, as Charlie Taff used to say. Get down, slide, get out of bounds, right? Live to play another play. That's what we always used to say as quarterbacks. Hey, don't be the hero. Live to play another play. Your team needs you. So if there's anything that's concerning, it's that. Is that a good problem to have? I don't know. I know he likes to be a competitor. He likes to play. But more importantly, he's a leader, man. So I'll take the good with the bad with Jaden Daniels.
Tell me what you like about Drake May and what you don't like about Drake May.
Well, look, he's got the physical abilities, right? My only knock on Drake May, if there is a knock, right? Look, all these quarterbacks have talent, right? I mean, they all do. They didn't, they wouldn't be in the position that they're in right now. But my one knock is just the competition, right? And I'm an ACC guy through and through, right? You know that, Kevin. I love the ACC, born and raised in the ACC, played in the ACC, right? Is the ACC at the same level as the SEC? No, right? No, we obviously know that. So I feel like Drake May, is Drake a true step above Sam Howell? I just don't think so. I just don't think so. Is it a sidestep? Maybe not. Maybe it's a half a step forward, right? And again, look, if I had all the answers, I would rather you ask me this question next year, this time next year, and I'll really give you my thoughts, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But I just feel like the level of play that Jaden Daniels plays against LSU in an SEC conference, we all know it's a big, massive primetime game every week against solid competition, and Jaden Daniels has proven that he can win against the best competition in the world.
What do you think about J.J. McCarthy? He's the other one that's being, you know, discussed as a potential top five pick.
Yeah, he is. I like J.J. McCarthy at the collegiate level, obviously, being coached and mentored under Jim Harbaugh, right? That says a lot. I just don't know if he's a finished product. He's still growing as a quarterback. He's played in that pro-style offense. He's got the good tools, mental, physical. He's got it all. I just don't know if he's ready right now for that next level. Remember, we have to have somebody to come in and compete, like now, right? I don't know if J.J. McCarthy can do that. I do believe Jaden Daniels can come in and compete now. I just don't know if J.J. McCarthy is ready. Now, he's got the physical tools, right? He's going to continue to develop mentally as a quarterback. But I'm not positive that he's ready to actually compete at the highest level and lead an NFL team. So, but again, I don't have all the answers. I know you wish that I did, but I don't. But
nobody
I like
does.
Jaden Daniels is that number one pick. Now, I do have a couple sleepers if you want to ask me that.
I do want to ask you that. But is one of them Michael Penix Jr., another lefty like yourself?
God, I love the lefty. I love the lefty spin. You know that, Kevin. I love the lefty spin. I actually like Michael Penix Jr., right? I mean, I've watched a lot of film on him. He can make all the throws. He's got a cannon of an arm. Injuries might be a factor down the line, but I do like that kid. Played in a tough conference, played his heart out, and he can definitely spin it. I love the way he throws the football. You want to go to my sleeper? It's
yeah.
Bo Nix. I really love Bo Nix.
Okay. Tell me why.
Now, if I just look, how many games has that guy started?
A lot.
Like 400 games. I mean, he's been in college for 10 years, right? I mean,
seems
the guy
like
has played at the high – yeah, the guy's played at a high level, high level – and has won for what's he played for 5 years? I mean, the guy is an athlete. If you go back and watch his film, I watched his pro day too. I mean, he makes all the throws. He rarely misses a throw. Now, again, we all know that everybody has the physical tools at this level, Kevin. It's more about the game of quarterback. The NFL is played from the shoulders up. We all know that. Look, I was a pretty good quarterback in college, right? When I got to the NFL, I struggled, man. Those bullets are flying at a faster speed at a higher level, and you've got to be able to make decisions before the ball is even snapped. You got to really know where you're going with the football before the ball is snapped, and that defense is not showing you what they're coming with. They're going to disguise it and move it the last second. So does Bo Nix have the mental capacity to start right away? I'm not sure, but I know he's got the physical tools, and I've seen it at a high level for the last 5 years. So if I had a sleeper pick, it would be Bo Nix.
What was it like when you got to the NFL and you were part of the Packers for a brief period of time and Brett Favre was there and, correct me if I'm wrong, was Aaron Rodgers there at the same time you were there or not?
No, Aaron Rodgers got drafted
2005.
The year that Green Bay sent, sent me over to NFL Europe, correct. So I was in Green Bay 04 with Brett, and then after the season, the Packers sent me over to NFL Europe, back when that league was around. That league doesn't exist right. anymore. But for guys who didn't get reps during the season, they threw them over to NFL Europe, and you represented your team over in Europe. So I played for the Rhein Fire over in Dusseldorf, Germany. After the season, when I came back to Green Bay, the Packers had drafted A-Rod. So I was a kid with my agent. I'm like, man, you smashed me in between two Hall of Famers. Huh? How the heck did you do that? So I never got to compete or play against Aaron because when I came home from NFL Europe, they had already put the pink slip in my locker. So I walked into the locker room, saw the pink slip, went up and interviewed, and I was out of there. So I never got to compete or see the field with A-Rod. But with Brett, I mean, God, I mean, he's all you can imagine. I mean, my childhood idol growing up, and I got to be in a meeting room with him, you know, on a daily basis and learn from him. And it was a relationship that was built and that we still have. So I'll cherish that one forever.
You still talk to Brett Favre?
Once in a while, once in a blue moon, you know, I'll be able to text him. I'll be able to, you know, DM him on Instagram. We'll communicate. But, yeah, he was just to watch him. Watch an NFL legend just, you know, operate at a high level, how he practiced, how he treated his body, how he treated his teammates, how he was coachable. Learning from him, it's like, man, it was a true honor to be able to sit on the bench, hold a clipboard, and learn from that guy.
You know, I just pulled up that roster from that year with Green Bay. Doug Peterson was there as well. What do you remember about him?
Hey, sir. He sure was. Dougie was a coach on and off the field, and I swear that's why they kept him, because, you know, did he have the talent to back Brett Favre up? No, he didn't. But, man, that guy, he was a true coach, and I saw it back then. I mean, Doug took me under his wing, you know, had film sessions with me, helped me study, helped me with reads on the field. I mean, we'd be in Skelly or we'd be in a team period, and he was a coach on the field. You know, he wasn't even getting any reps. It wasn't his drill. It wasn't his series. And he was coaching me on, hey, read the flat defender, okay, cover two. You can't throw a hitch in cover two. You got to let it rip here. Like, he was just he was an overall coach to me, and he didn't have to do that. So I've always respected Doug, and I've always been a big fan of, they called him Dougie. I've always been a big fan of Dougie ever since he kind of took me, a little lefty rookie, under his belt and kind of taught me the ropes.
What you mentioned, just the speed of the game, what else made it a really hard transition for you from being an outstanding college quarterback and then getting to the NFL? What was the biggest overall challenge, and the challenge that a lot of these young guys are going to face, you know, with, you know, as much talent as they have?
Well, I always compare it to, you have to learn quick. I mean, you got to learn on the fly. You have to be able to absorb information. It's like when I transferred to Maryland, Ralph Friesen's playbook was a dictionary. I mean, it really was. And it was a blessing in disguise that I had to sit out my sophomore year, because I had the whole year to learn that playbook, learn Ralph's offense, his system, his terminology. If I had to go in and play right away, I would have never been able to do it, because there's so much information. Now, remember, we were running Stan Humphrey's offense from the San Diego Chargers Super Bowl days. We were running that offense. That was an NFL offense that we were running in Maryland. To be able to come in and pick that up right away in 2 weeks would be impossible. So going to the NFL, it's the same thing, man. I mean, you need to pick up that terminology, pick up that playbook, understand the offense like the back of your hand in 2 weeks in training camp. And if they think that you got it, like, then you can stay, then you can get reps, then you can compete for a starting job. That's really hard to do. Now, of course, there's mini camps, and you have some time to really pick up that system. But for me, I had to learn everything quick and have to adapt to the speed of the game. So that's hard for any quarterback to learn.
Thanks for doing this. I'm glad you're well. Best to you and your family. Enjoy the draft.
Thanks for having me, Kevin. I really appreciate it. Looking forward to it.
Scott McBrien, everybody. For my money, in my lifetime of watching Maryland football, the second greatest quarterback in school history. The greatest is Boomer Esiason, but Scott McBrien is number two, in my opinion. And that just reminded me of, why didn't I ask him about Lua Tagovailoa's pro prospects? I should have. We had that conversation when Leah's career came to an end a few months back, and Leah holds most of the passing records at Maryland. And I said at the time, he's been a, you know, really, really good quarterback at Maryland, and he holds all these records, but he's nowhere near the greatest quarterback in school history. Boomer Esiason, for my lifetime of watching Maryland football, is the greatest quarterback in school history, and Scott McBrien's number two. And then after that, we can have a debate. But Maryland's had so many great quarterbacks. But I should have asked him about Leah's pro prospects. My guess is that Leah won't get drafted, but may get an undrafted free agent contract and be in a training camp this summer. One more thing before we wrap it up for the day. I got this from Jason. Jason wrote, Kevin, since they're not trading back and they've made that clear, why don't they just say it's Daniels if it's Daniels? Well, Jason, here's a theory. The league doesn't want them to say it's Daniels because it's a much better cliffhanging drama tomorrow night after Caleb Williams goes one to Chicago if everybody's sitting on the edge of their seats waiting for Washington's pick. Do I think that happened? No, I actually don't think that happened. But it is true that now that we know that number one is Caleb Williams to Chicago, the drama and the conversation for weeks, if not months, has been about what Washington will do it to. And if that gets out there as that's what they're doing, and, you know, a lot of people believe that's what they're doing, it won't be as dramatic tomorrow night. But I wonder how quickly they'll turn that card in tomorrow night after Caleb Williams goes number one. We will soon find out. That was a busy show. It was not as long as it probably could have been or should have been with four guests, which I think is a record on a show for me. But thanks to Scott McBrien, thanks to Jay Gruden, thanks to Ralph Vacchiano, and thanks to Smoke and Al Koken. All right, that's it for today. Back tomorrow with Tommy.
And here to sing the Star Spangled Banner, please welcome back Grammy Award winning baritone, John Brancy.
Time inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.